It's very nice to meditate with you. My watch told me I had to start talking, and I didn't quite understand what it was doing. I was quite enjoying meditating with you. I'd probably prefer just to carry on. You might agree shortly. To make it as easy as possible for everyone to understand, I think we're offering translation. I think Itai is at the back there. And if you feel now or at any point that it would be helpful to have access to this translation, to the interpretation of the retreat into Hebrew, then please just head over there. If you're already over there and you feel like it's disturbing you, feel free to move this way or away from that. Plenty of space we can make, and bring a chair or bring whatever you have with you. And everyone else, just make yourself as comfortable as possible for what is helpful, conducive to listening. So there's a few things I want to cover this evening, and I want to speak a little bit about perception. So if that sounds like a weird thing and you might need more help with Hebrew, that's why I'm kind of saying it now, talking about what we perceive, what we experience, and how that's impacted by sila and metta, the kind of theme, central theme of this retreat. The particular expressions of freedom that we're looking for, that care, that kindness, goodwill, all of that. So let's begin. Feel free to continue making any adjustments you need. So the Dharma, the teachings that are offered to us, are an invitation, and they are a revelation. Yeah, they are revealing something for us, something we wouldn't normally notice. At the heart of it, there is this idea that the Buddha, the awakened one, is putting forward, is that there's actually something fundamental, really deeply rooted, that we are misunderstanding about life, and that we don't need to misunderstand about life, that we can come to our senses, become wise about, and that will change the way that we live our lives. There's something in this experience right now that we could benefit from uncovering or discovering more about. And that's what all of these teachings and practices are about. Yeah. So, I don't know. Sometimes some people have accused me of just being a bit weird in the things that I talk about, and like, am I trying to confuse people? Honestly, I'm just trying to explain how I understand this, and I hope that it will be in a useful way. So I'm going to say something in the beginning. I'm going to make a relatively bold statement, but I feel like it's true. All of this path is made possible by the fact that we are conscious of being conscious. We are conscious of being conscious, right? We are having an experience now of having an experience. And we're actually able to perceive that this is a perception. Okay? We're able to know that we know this is happening. That's an amazing quality of experience, which in and of itself is like, well, that's just trippy. We could talk about that at midnight and like, whoa, throw it back and forward, some of this. Great. But it also makes a load of freedom moves available to us. Yeah. And I want to speak a little bit about what that means. Yeah. So in this moment, we're not just listening to this. We know that we're listening to this. And we know that we know that we're listening to this. Yeah. It's interesting that that is available to us at any point in time. We can know that we're having an experience. This experience that we're having is a perception of reality. Okay? And we'll unpack this bit by bit, but like each of these ideas are building on each other. This, all of this, you in this room listening to this happening at this time with everything else that's going on in the world is not more than a perception. Yeah? It's not how it really is. It's not. It's a way that it seems to be to you in this moment. Your best guess, you're probably on the money. Yeah, you're probably completely right. Maybe this really is how it is. But you could also see it another time. You could look at it a different way, relate to it a different way, and it starts to change. All of the practices that we do change our experience. And if they didn't, they wouldn't be worth doing. And that's what they do. They change our experience. So our experience is dependently arising, dependently fading, coming into being, going out of being. And why? Because it's a perception of reality, not exactly how reality is. And we can look at it in different ways. We can relate to it in different ways. And this all opens up. And all of this is only possible because we're able to be conscious of being conscious. We're able to perceive that this is a perception. Yeah. We're able to know that we know whatever it is that we know. And because of all that, we can learn to shape our experience towards more freedom, towards more well-being, towards more harmonious, radiant, beautiful qualities. The path. This path of peace, this path of beauty, this path of freedom. So this experience is a perception. And perception and experience are basically the same thing. You change your perception and you change your experience. So the perception is what you perceive in this moment of knowing. Everything that you perceive, it's all perceptions, it's all appearances. English has adopted this Greek word, phenomena. It's a really lovely word. It means appearances, literally, yeah. So what is appearing to you in this moment of consciousness, this moment of sensitivity? And we could ask, I wonder why it's appearing that way and not another way. What's going on in this experience? What am I not noticing? What could I attend to more? What different way of relating could I bring? And all of that is a way of describing all of these practices that we could do. Yeah. When we are having an experience at times, it feels to us, well, this is just how it has to be. Yeah. And the only thing I can do is just accept that this is how it is. When we spoke about this before, you were maybe more tired then. You may not remember a couple of nights ago. Spoke about that. And then when we accept, okay, there isn't anything I can do about this experience, there's no way that I can change it, we suddenly started changing. Because of the amount of acceptance, because there wasn't so much acceptance before. So everything that we do changes how things appear. And then someone might make a very bold statement, say, there's no way that anything ever is. Right? There's nothing concrete that you can say about anything. And then it's just absolute confusion and it's all just a mess. But actually, there are ways of making things more free. And we can trust in that capacity that we feel it. When things become more free, there are ways of making gross, heavy, solid things become more diffuse, yeah, more light, dissolve, become more easeful. And there's ways that we know how to do that. Yeah, there's ways that we can react and the ways that we can open into more lovely ways of being. So all of that is made possible because it's just phenomena, appearances. It's just perceptions. The appearance of things. And knowing that we know this, we can know that we can play with this. So our whole of our life is made of experiences like that. Whole of our life is a series of experiences. And every experience is based on what we're paying attention to? Out of all of these things that you could be paying attention to, what are you paying attention to? Ask ourselves that in meditation. I realize this whole talk is just full of things that I ask myself in my meditation. Like, what are you paying attention to? Why that again? There's other things you could pay attention to. What about paying attention to this? What about paying attention to that? And when you pay attention to a different what, your experience changes. So your life is made up of paying attention to this. And if you find yourself, oh, I'm paying attention to this again, you're kind of repeating in your life. Is that what you want to pay attention to? You can choose. You can choose where you place that attention. And we know that because many of us today, maybe we had a fantasy or a thought or whatever, and we're like, oh, whoops, I was supposed to be, you know, doing metta or paying attention to the breath or whatever. I should pay attention to that. I thought, no, I'm going to finish the fantasy. You know, I'm going to go back there. I like this one. This is, I'll treat myself to this one, you know, have that one again. Yeah. So we know we can do this. And we know it's tempting not to. And an interesting one, and the kind of the heart of other things that we've already been talking about, is actually we can change our experience by how we pay attention to it. Now, if you notice that how you bring your attention. So an obvious one is more metta. Bring more metta, more kindness, more goodwill into your experience. And that really changes things. But you can also bring more interest, curiosity. Well, what is this like? And that's a very different way of meeting something than, you know, not coming close to it. There's lots of possibilities that we can do here. And all of this, to be part of the Buddha Dharma path, is we're doing it to dissolve dukkha, ease down, quieten down dukkha, the distress, the ill ease, the ill being that we can feel at times. And understanding, so what's it like when there's dukkha, how it feels for things to be built up, to be escalated, to be agitated, to be in a spin, to be spun up in that entangled experience. And then we also know how it is for things to open, to free, to feel more ease, to feel that kind of harmonization, that gathering, that well-being. And all the paths of practice speak to that, moving from that, from the gross to the subtle, from the reactive to the peaceful. All of the practices we can do, more mindfulness, more metta, more samadhi, more well-being. Yeah, all of that. And so it's important that our practice of waking up, what we call our meditation practice, our cultivation of these things, shouldn't be seen as a chore, as something we have to do, something we should be doing, but actually something that's beautiful for us. It's an invitation to come to life. It's an invitation to bring our deepest intentions into being, moment by moment, drop by drop, as we're doing it. So we can frame this whole exploration that we build from this possibility space that's open by being able to know that we know that we're having an experience around this idea of like, okay, where's the dukkha and how can I dissolve it? Very skillful way of practicing, very central to the way that we've probably heard these teachings many times. And there's also another framing of these teachings, which the Buddha frames around the question of happiness or lasting well-being. And he's kind of asking this question is, do you actually know where or what brings happiness into your life? And you do know, right? And do you live that way, according to that way? Or do you actually live in ways that bring you away from that experience, make it less accessible, less immediate? When does this sustainable well-being come into being? Where does this harmonious peacemaking come into being? What is it we're paying attention to? How is it we're paying attention in those times when that comes to be? And the Buddha put it this way: what, when I do it, will lead to my long-term well-being and happiness? Long-term, lasting well-being and happiness. What, when I do it? Something we do, something we can do. And also, of course, includes something we don't do. And I think Zal was touching on that with this kind of two sorts of thinking way. Like, okay, we could go down this way and buy our guaranteed ticket to Dukaville and travel off down to there and move in, settle in, have a stressful and agitated time full of aversion and greed and disturbance and harmfulness. Or we could choose the harming less route, the generosity way. So what do we do, or what do we stop doing, that opens up that? And of course, this is sila. This is the atmosphere of care that we can cultivate. So there's something in what we pay attention to, how we pay attention to it, that I think is really important here. And someone asked a question in a Dharma session one time when I was in, they were leading it. Said, what would happen if we regarded all phenomena, all appearances that have arisen, as if they've only arisen to be met with kindness and care? Anything, any sensation, it's only come into being to be met with kindness and care. How would that be? And I thought, that's a really good question, very leading question, but very good question. And it led to a real sense of, it's actually really nice to see it that way. Like a pain in the knee has arisen to be met with kindness and care. It hasn't come to say, may I make your life hell? Could you meet me with kindness and care too? Yeah. That warm tenderness suddenly started to open in the heart. Can you meet this with kindness and care? And so, sure, we're fabricating, making up a way of conceiving our experience. And that's not really how it is. So this is kind of the second, what I think is a really central point about these Dharma teachings, in my opinion, is they don't tell you the way things really are. They don't tell you the true way things really are. But they instruct you, if you look at it this way, it could bring you more freedom, could bring you more well-being, could align you with your sila, with your metta, if you look at it this way. And if you understand that this is a path of more sila, more care, more metta, more kindness, look at it that way. Look at it that way. And in the end, it won't matter if that's really the way it is or not, if it shapes you towards living the way that you want to live. This path is only possible for what we experience are appearances, phenomena. When I was thinking about this talk, I was reminded of, must have been a couple of years ago, when we were meditating here and outside there was this constant beep, 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 beep. And it would often turn up in the Dharma talks. And, you know, other like evening times, I sit there. Many people were quite frustrated by this sound. At a certain point, one of us here, I don't remember if it was me or someone else on the retreat, realized it was an owl. It's called the hairy owl, you call it in Hebrew. Yeah. And we call it the Scops owl in English. And wow, very different perception, very different phenomena, very different appearance. Same sound now. Beep, beep, beep. And it's the Scops owl, the hairy owl, as you call it, calling out, you know, where's my partner? And like, learning more about it. They're monogamous. They have lifelong partners, and they're calling out, and they look after their young, and you know, all that life that they have, instead of being like some electrical malfunction. That why aren't the managers fixing this thing? You know, very different thing. And things are not what they appear to be necessarily in the first look. Yeah. It's worth to slow down and check, to check in, to listen more deeply, to examine. And there's a little weird thing about it, that Scops is actually referring to the fact that they have these ears that they can listen in. And it means to examine. I like that. It's like he's actually saying to us, you're not hearing what you're meant to be hearing. Examine your experience. Look into your experience. And there's something about our experience that I want to just touch into that'll kind of support further exploration on this retreat. So I want to talk about a really subtle element of our experience and something that I had no idea was there until I heard about it in the teachings. Many of you will already have heard about this feature. It's called Vedana, sometimes translated as feeling tone in English or other things like that, feeling or sensation. And basically, it's how all of our phenomena are actually kind of categorized or divided up into ones that we feel will bring us happiness, ones that we feel will bring us painful experiences, and ones that we feel just really don't matter at all, and we just ignore those. Turns out that that's actually the biggest portion of the pie, all those things that we just ignore and overlook because, like, who cares? Yeah, like that. We had that yesterday. We don't need to worry about that. And most of the experience part of our life, of course, is what we attend to, are the things that are painful, hard to bear, feel like problems, and we kind of churn into those. So when you find yourself getting distracted, many times we notice where we're drawn, notice what we're drawn to. It'd be just helpful just to notice, I've gone to the painful again. So trying to find some happiness in this moment. Won't be a very common thing where it's like, I found myself paying attention to the things in between that really don't seem to offer anything of any real resource, right? So that's that whole rich area that we could pay attention to. So I'm mentioning this because what we pay attention to is really important. And we can just start to notice, well, in this moment of experience, there might be some what here that is unpleasant. And I keep finding myself paying attention to that. But there's going to be something here that's maybe pleasant. And there's going to be something that's not so unpleasant and not so pleasant, or deemed to be, let's say, more accurately, that I could pay attention to. There's probably some part of your body that you haven't paid attention to the whole time that you've been here. Some kind of patch of skin, some area of the body you haven't really brought your attention to. Yeah, inside of the, what is this, upper arm. Never point before you've worked out what the part of your anatomy is called. Bottom of your chin. Anyone been tuning into the bottom of their chin? Little fingertips. Yeah. So we don't pay attention to a lot of the parts of our experience. And what happens when we pay attention to that part? What would happen if that part was actually a subtler part of our experience? And we could pay attention there. If the what we pay attention to shapes the experience that we're having, and that what is more subtle, and it also turns out that moving from dukkha to freedom is more subtle, what happens to experience when we pay attention there? Well, what happens is we get distracted and then we think about the to-do list and the things that we have to do. But if we stayed with it, what would happen to our experience? Would it change? Would it become more free, more beautiful? And what if we cultivated the skill to bring interest into that area of our experience? What would happen then? Or more kindness, more kind attention. So that's something we could try. And so typically what happens in our life, in our world, is as soon as we make contact with something, it becomes a sensation to us. And part of being a sensation is also this subtle sense, oh, I want this, I don't want this, I don't care about this, this isn't worth attending to. And if it isn't worth attending to, it doesn't fully become a sensation most of the time. Yeah, for it really to be a sensation, it has to be something that's wanted, or it's a problem and I'm wanting to get rid of it. And so many of you will know your Four Noble Truths, you know, this central teaching of the Dharma is that in life there is dukkha, and that dukkha is caused by this thirsting onto experience, this craving, this demanding, get this, get rid of that, get this, get rid of that, get this, get rid of that, and spinning us up into this cycle of reactivity that builds and builds and builds until it's unignorable. And then we come to someone and say, does anyone know how to get rid of this dukkha I'm experiencing? Yeah, can I find some way out of this experience? And then someone says, oh, well, you could try, you know, this and this, and okay, it starts to work. And if it works for us, this bringing in more kindness, tolerance, patience, attending in different ways, whatever the practice is for us, brings that sense of freedom, we get into this third noble truth, which is the fading away of this dukkha. And this path opens up for us. So in essence, the condition under which dukkha arises is this reactivity. And all of this reactivity is due to the assumption that things will really be able to bring pleasant experiences, or things will really be able to bring painful experiences, or things independently from their own side offer us nothing. And that's simply not true. Simply not true. If you're having a painful experience and you meet it with compassion, it's not the same experience as if you're having a painful sensation or emotion and you meet it with rejection and aversion or try and escape from it. It's not the same experience, and we know it's not. So this Vedana thing turns up, says, oh, painful, pleasant, neither, very quickly in the making of experience. And we overlook that, believe it, react to it, and have a horrible time. Yeah. And so this teaching says, yeah, don't do that. Don't do that. When it arises, don't fully believe it. At least don't react to it in the way that you feel the impulse to. We've been having some delicious food here. It's a good example of a pleasant Vedana that you can have. It's like, yummy, you know, really enjoyable, going down very nicely. And sometimes if it's really tasty, we'll be thinking about getting more of it while we still have it in front of us. Thinking, I hope no one's finishing it off. You know, that one, they took too much. And instead of enjoying and appreciating and delighting and absorbing and getting into this lovely taste sensation, we're out of the moment. So greed is the worst possible thing to do for pleasant experiences. So if we believe, this is pleasant, this will make me happy, and then I grasp onto it, try and hoard it up, keep it away, yeah. Wow, what a way to ruin a beautiful experience. Whereas if we're sensible, if we have wisdom, then we think, okay, how can I share this as widely as possible with as many people as possible? right? So that we can give these things, these beautiful things, away. The two sorts again. Yeah. Move into the generosity, the gratitude, the appreciation. Share what we get. So we need to notice Vedana like we notice a Scops owl. You notice it? Yeah. Right. So we need to notice it like we notice that. Now, how do we notice it? Right. It's like, how do we notice the wind? Because movement in the trees. And we can notice the Vedana by the contraction in the heart, or the tightness in the body. Yeah. Oh, I'm trying to get something or get rid of something. Oh, yeah. I wonder what the Vedana is. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Here it is. Oh, let's meet it another way. Let's meet it another way. It opens out that possibility. Let's pay attention to something else. Something quieter. So this Vedana unlocks all types of things in our experience. And sometimes it's just helpful just to notice, okay, this is felt to be unpleasant right now. That's how it feels to be right now. Sila and metta are non-reactivity. What builds up dukkha is reactivity. All these ways, all of these practices are expressing the care and the kindness. And maybe each of the types of Vedana that appear have appeared at least this much to be met with kindness and care. The unnoticed, the overlooked aspects of our experience, aren't they also like the overlooked, the ignored members of our society, our communities? That's not a sila thing to do. So we bring them in as well. And it turns out it's really delightful for us to include more, to welcome in more. What's already quite okay, doing nicely, can bring some pleasantness. We can bring that in, hold it in the palm of the hand, like that delicate feather. You too, welcomed in, included, tuned into. So all of these phenomena of experience can be met. And why? Because sila, care, leads to happiness. Leads to happiness. And we want more happiness. That's not the bad part. We want more happiness. And the good news is you can have more happiness if you understand where it comes from. Because it comes from kindness and care. It comes from resourcefulness. It's sustainable. It's lasting well-being and happiness. It's not a question of how quickly can I get all the happiness so that someone else doesn't get it. One of my, actually our Zohar, my really core teachers was a man called Baba Amte. And one of his sayings, he had a lot of slogans. I notice I have a lot of slogans in here. My practice slogans is, happiness dies when it isn't shared. Happiness dies when it isn't shared. So this is a practice, practicing the ways that we relate, practicing what we attend to. And yeah, we can guide our attention towards those places that we tend not to notice. And tomorrow I'm wanting to guide a practice, and you can begin it now if you want, of starting to notice more that we overlook, to bring in more of the experience that we can be having, more of the things that actually bring a sense of ease and openness, subtlety, delicacy, and seeing if we can sustain our attention there and see what happens to these things when they are held in attention. When we pay attention, we give attention. It's an act of generosity. It's an act of metta. It's an act of kindness. And things change in that atmosphere of kindness. That's a possibility that we can do with our life, with our experience, our potential life, our existence. So let's take a moment together to breathe a breath that could easily be overlooked, fill into a life that could be missed. And as we breathe this breath, noticing if you want to bring more attention to the in-breath, if you need the enlivening or the out-breath, if you need the softening. Noticing it's not a neutral thing to be able to breathe. It's a beautiful thing. Letting the inhalation happen by itself. Body breathing. Exhalation. By itself. And the appreciation. Knowing this breath, knowing the knowing of this breath, this life. And in a moment, I'll ring the bell. So all I invite is that when you move from this posture to the walking movement posture, don't come all the way out. See if you can keep your experience going. It's almost as if we've been blowing up a balloon of intentional kindness and care. I'm just going to carry that balloon out with us into the night. And keep inflating, keeping it going, keeping it growing. Thank you for your listening and your practice and presence.